you, we've just gone live on Facebook and we've also got Aman here. So I'm just going to introduce and then hand over to Aman to do his presentation, Digital Identity or Digital Dictatorship. So just to introduce myself, my name's Kate Mason. We're on the Central Coast, just an hour or so above Sydney, because this will be live streamed and people will be watching this around the world. I stood for the Informed Medical Options Party in the federal election, which was 2 weeks ago, and we have a very concerned community around a number of factors. I came across Armin on, watched a video of him on Facebook where he was speaking about smart cities and asked him if he would be able to do a presentation to us and our community. So just to introduce Armin, so it's Armin Javi. He has a high-tech career spanning over 25 years. He was at the forefront of video and camera technology in Silicon Valley. He has co-founded two camera startups. And if you have a camera in your phone, stream video or movies, he played a part in it. Armin has a bachelor in electrical and electronics engineering and master's in chemistry from India, and a master's in chemical engineering from Penn State University. And he studied computer science at Stanford University. As a lover of liberty, Armin arrived in the US in 1988 in search of a free society and now resides in Big Fork, Montana. So he's being streamed in from Montana. Thank you so much for being here, Armin. It's a real pleasure. Thank you for your time. And we appreciate, because we all feel like we need some more understanding about what's soon to be rolled in. Just a little bit of housekeeping, if everyone could just make sure their mobile phones are turned off. So we're going to pass it over to you and have you speak for about half an hour or 40 minutes with your presentation, and then we'll do some question and answers at the end, and we'll go from there. So thank you and welcome.
Thank you, Kate, for having me here. I really appreciate it. I just want to clarify, I have an electrical engineering master's from Penn State, not a chemical engineering. So, but that's a just minor detail. And hello, everyone. I hope that I can impart my knowledge here so that people know what's actually going on and can take actions in their local neighborhoods and communities. So what I'm going to speak about is really about what's happening in the world, and it all ties down to the digital identity, and it's being done through cameras and facial recognition. And you'll see how all the elements of all the complexities of the world will be tied up into the digital identity. And so the question I asked myself a while ago is digital identity really going to be a dictatorship, or are they one and the same thing?
I'm just having a little trouble. I just want to double check. I think the sound's not coming through that well from, is the sound coming through well from my side? Can you hear me properly?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Now, are we having trouble hearing Armin on the other side? It's a bit of delay. So what does that mean? We need to slow it down? Okay, so what we're experiencing is a little bit of delay when you're speaking. So it comes through and it gets a bit jaggedy. So if you could talk a little bit slower, that might help with that.
I'll try my best. Okay. So the way I've broken up my presentation is initially, I'm going to introduce what is facial recognition and how it's been sold to us as a public across the world and how it's being used. Then I'll kind of move to sharing, how cameras and surveillance has been set up in China and across the world and how that is being sold to us. From there, we'll, transition to how a digital panopticon that's being built for our safety and security. And then I'll switch to, a little bit on, I'll talk about smart cities and, how all the smart light infrastructure and all the surveillance is connected to, helping us along in the future. That's being sarcastic. And from there, I'll make a transition to, you know, actually how the digital identity is going to be used in the future and how it's going to be implemented through the internet and all our devices. And then we can have a discussion on, you know, what we can do in our local neighborhoods and communities to try and counteract what's being done to us. So with that, I'm going to start my slides. All right. So how does facial recognition work? Most of us, we use these smartphones, and the introduction, the benefits to us and how it's been introduced is that, you know, it unlocks your phone and it's convenient, and it's also for our safety and security. So the way it works is there's an invisible or infrared projector inside your phone, which throws a beam of light. It's like actually what they call a structured light pattern. And that pattern gets distorted on your face, and that distortion is unique for every face in the world. And some sort of a, you know, a formula is computed, and that formula is then matched to the formula and dots that have been stored in the phone. And then it unlocks your phone when it authenticates your identity. When you are looking at facial recognition cameras which are not in your phone, then that equation or the dot pattern is compared with millions of other images and faces in order to verify your authenticity. So that's how facial recognition works in devices and cameras. So the way this has been sold to us have been the carrots. It's for convenience, of course, and it's for our safety and security. And of course, it's to catch the bad guys. You know, it's to catch terrorists and thieves and child molesters. And as a society across the world, we've bought this story. And by the end of the presentation, or even I'd say 70% into this, you will see how the sticks are coming for all of humanity. And the sticks are going to be, you know, sealing our fate. It's going to be really bad, right? The way it's been shown in China, you know, Big Brother has already met big data, and facial recognition and cameras, they have been computing now for a few years, social credits for all the Chinese citizens. And social credits can be used to directly control the behavior of people. Right? I was at a conference in China in late 2019 in Shenzhen. And Shenzhen is kind of one of the ultimate smart cities already built by then. And this was the kind of you know, surveillance that you see at every intersection, every building. So they have license plate readers. They have lane detection cameras. They have face recognition cameras. They are sucking up data in real time, 24/7. And they have screens everywhere you go, in railway stations, in airports. And they are telling you, we are watching you. We know who you are. And we are going to keep watching you, and you're going to be okay with it. And there's this kind of a programming that's gone on. Apologies. Sorry, I got a phone call. I thought I'd shut off all my devices. So here's, you know, some girls showing off their social credit scores on an app. And what that does is it controls directly your behavior and your compliance based on how the algorithms and Big Brother wants you to behave. Right? So you'll see lots of documentaries from Australia, England, United States, BBC's continues to come out with documentary about every few weeks. And the narrative is that privacy and freedom are dead in China. Social credits control system is already there in China. And implicitly, we in the Western world are free. What they don't tell you is it's already happening here. We don't have any privacy or freedom. The credit scoring system has already started. And we are not free. It's just that we have not yet been given an app to show us what our social credit scores are. At some point, they are going to do that, and it's not too far from now. Right? What is not said is that cameras per capita in the United States is greater than in China as of February 2022. And London, which is one of the supposedly free cities in the world in a free country called the United Kingdom, it's number three in the world in terms of cameras per 1,000 people. So the infrastructure here is in place. All the systems are in place in the West, and they are expanding. And by 2025, $2 trillion would have been spent in establishing, installing the infrastructure of cameras, surveillance, and smart cities. And by 2030, that number is going to be at $7 trillion. And these reports have all been published. That's the kind of infrastructure that's being spent. So while the world was sleeping and COVID was announced in March of 2020, and most of the places in the world were locked down, in quarantine, and the Fear TV was blasting in every home in the world, they were installing the smart city infrastructure with cameras and smart lights and smart poles. By the end of 2022, 1 billion surveillance cameras connected to the internet and to the cloud and artificial intelligence will have been installed. And that's for a population of 7 billion people. It's not to catch the bad guys, in case you hadn't figured that out. It's to catch all of us because we are all the bad guys. Right? And by the end of 2022, we are going to have over 20 billion data collection cameras. That includes all our smartphones, home security cameras, your cameras in automobiles, when you reverse in autonomous driving cars and whatnot. So that's the kind of surveillance that's being done as we speak. So in the old days, human eyeballs used to sit in front of TV screens to look at, you know, traffic or people running, you know, after stealing a bank or something. But that is so yesterday. Today we have smart artificial intelligence cameras that are effectively the security guards. They're connected to the cloud, and in the cloud is running artificial intelligence, and it's identifying and analyzing and logging and learning about every human being all the time in real time. So no human beings are necessary. We are being replaced by AI in probably 70% of activities around in the world. So when are we not alone? Pretty much never, not even in our own homes. And so here is a picture of what they call a panopticon. It's a circular prison. And this is a picture of a circular prison in a state of Rhode Island in the northeast of the United States from the late 1920s. So you see that the prison guards are in the center and they can look at all the, you know, the prison cells. So all the prisoners basically are never in a private moment, you know? So they can be monitored all the time at the whims of the guards that are in there. What we have today is a digital panopticon. So we are effectively, both symbolically and practically, inside a prison cell. Even though you don't have the four walls, you know, erected yet, computer vision, along with cameras and artificial intelligence, is looking at us, analyzing us, logging us, and learning our behavior, and then it's going to be scoring us, and then rinse and repeat. So we are being monitored everywhere and all the time. There's a term called the Internet of Eyes and Ears that started popping up in venture capital circles about 5-6 years ago. And what they are literally building is the Internet of Eyes. And you can see pictures in your daily lives where all the cameras are, right? At intersections, your self-driving cars, and even modern cars today have between 8 and 16 cameras, brand new cars that are coming out inside them, and also looking outside. They're monitoring babies, they're monitoring drivers, they're monitoring the full cabin. They have satellite cameras, drone cameras, they have license plate readers, they have invisible infrared cameras looking at passengers and drivers. It's ridiculous how much we are being monitored all the time. And of course, it's always in the name of safety and security and convenience. Remember those words. Anytime you hear a television head speaking or reading the newspaper or social media, beware of those three words. And inside your home, we are all giving up our data and helping Big Brother. And I almost know nobody in this world who doesn't use technologies from one of these companies. We are on a Zoom call, by the way. So all these companies, amongst many others, are all involved in the so-called stakeholder capitalism that's being implemented. And every time, we are using our devices or not using our devices, if we are on a network connected to the internet, data is being collected on us. So this is not about surveillance. This is about data collection. And you'll see the difference as we continue the presentation. Here's a picture at night with smart poles and smart streetlights. They are being put up all around the world. The reports have said that by 2030, 600 million of these streetlights will have been installed around the world. Just think about that. They have these bright, oppressive LED lights, which have kind of gotten rid of a natural darkness in our lives. And I'm going to show you what these are about to do. But this is being sold as smart cities, which is not only for your convenience, it's good for the environment and for global warming and climate change. And that's how they've been ushering these in. Here's an example of a smart pole with a smart city light. They will have speakers to give instructions to people if they don't already in Australia. I think I've seen stuff from Melbourne that already has those. They'll have digital signage. It'll be sold for your convenience, but again, it's about giving instructions to people on how to behave. They're going to have face recognition cameras. They're going to have all sorts of pollution sensors. That's how they're selling it. The top of some of these lights is going to have drone charging stations. Why? Because drones are going to be the new aerial police, along with other things. And they are all going to be wirelessly connected to each other and to the internet. And this is part of the Internet of Things. And these smart cities are about data collection, number one. And we are going to see how they're going to enforce people to behave, number two. So here's an example that's a picture somebody sent me from Canada. And they've installed these things, what look like LED incapacitators. This was funded by the Department of Homeland Security and a company, Intelligent Optical Systems, in 2007 started to develop this. And then the next generation, more modern versions of these were done at Penn State universities, maybe 20 years after I graduated from that. And I don't know what the level of weaponry they have achieved already, and I'm researching that right now as we speak. But these are known as puke guns or puke rays. What they do is they can send out highly focused, high intensity beams of different frequencies and colors before the human brain and eye can adapt to that. They'll change the frequency. And basically it causes intracranial pressure. That's pressure in the brain. It's going to make you puke. It can make you sick. It can cause spinal problems and a whole lot of other problems. And these are already being installed around the world. Even the standard LED lights, and I'm researching this. I'm going to make a presentation solely on smart lights and smart cities next. They will be used to enforce behavior. There are some of them that can see cars up to 300 meters away, humans with their guns or without guns, 150 meters away. I've also seen specs that there are certain smart lights that have the ability to see 6 miles away. So what they're installing is not lights for our safety or security or our convenience. They're installing an open air digital prison, and they don't need human guards from three-letter spook agencies to enforce all this stuff. It'll be enforced through artificial intelligence and all these electromagnetic weapons, whether they are microwave frequencies from towers or from 5G or with LED lights. And for people who don't know what LED is, it's the light emitting diode, and it's done in semiconductor processes, and they can build millions of them in minutes. So far I talked about cameras, what is face recognition, talked about cameras, the surveillance infrastructure, how it's being set up, and a little bit on smart cities. Let's see how this now connects to the kind of the the primary message of this presentation, and it's about the digital identity. So here is a diagram on the right. This I found in a paper at the World Economic Forum website, and it was published in 2018. And the digital identity, they say, is a new chapter in the social contract. It's a social contract that nobody signed up for and nobody wants, but they are, you know, planting this on us and going to force this on us. And the digital, every entity, person, device, and thing is going to have a digital identity. And once you sign on to a digital identity, the only way you can access healthcare or your bank finances, ability to travel, ability to access the internet, to go to social platforms or do anything in your life, to buy food, you need a digital identity. And how will that digital identity be authenticated? Through your face. So your face is the key to unlocking access to life. And this key is going to be linked to a new type of financial system, which is going to be a combination of carbon credits, your social credits or social score. The technically correct term is reputation capital. And then, of course, your status with respect to vaccines and boosters and injections. And if you don't have enough carbon score, if you don't have enough social score, or you haven't taken your latest booster, your face will not be able to unlock your digital identity, and therefore you cannot access stuff. You'll be locked out of the whole new matrix system. And this is what they call central bank digital currency, or CBDCs. They may have minor variations in different countries, but this is essentially the key to understanding what sort of a new world that is going to be upon us once the final switches are turned on. And how does this link to smart cities? Because your face is going to be tracked wherever you're going. Your social score will be updated in real time based on who your friends are, or whether you're social distancing, who you are walking with, when you're walking, when were you supposed to walk, et cetera, et cetera. And the universal basic income that they are now starting to give in some countries, that's also about giving carbon credits. Your carbon credits are going to be limited per month, and that's how it's going to go. Right? So your digital identity is really a digital prison, and your face is used to unlock the digital prison if you behave well. And how are they going to implement this? There's a new protocol called Zero Trust in cybersecurity worlds of, you know, software and server companies that are implementing this. And so by default, we are going from a world of implicit allow to default deny. So as an example, when you log into your computer, you type in a password, and when you type in a password, you have access to all your browser, your files, your applications. But now this zero trust is about default deny. It means we don't trust you. And for everything you need to do, you'll be denied initially until you can prove that you're trustworthy. And that trust will come from face recognition and your digital identity, right? And so this is going to be the new world. It's going to be a world with locks, and anything we want to do anytime, all the time, whether you want to switch on your smart, your smart oven, or your, you know, open your smart refrigerator, or get into the internet, get into Facebook, you're continuously being monitored by your face and your digital identity. So the concept of HTTPS, which is like secure authentication when you go to websites, everything is going to be removed, because the algorithms and AI, they need to keep watching you and how you're behaving. They're going to be scoring your emotions. They're going to be tracking your eye movements, and everything's going to be recorded all the time. So this is where we are going if we allow this to happen. Here's an example of how zero trust principles are going to be used when you go to the new shopping paradigm, where all the doors are going to be digital screens, locked with some very heavy duty plastics or LEDs, and you want to be able to open the door without your digital ID. So digital ID is all about conditional access. So if you have your carbon credits for the month are expired, that door won't open to get beef. If you've had too much sugar for the first 2 weeks and your credits have expired for the sugar, the door won't open to get your orange juice. So these types of doors are going to have face recognition cameras, and your digital ID will be used to unlock these doors. And there's something known as smart contracts. If people don't know, you'll start reading about it. Smart contracts is really the if, then, and else logic that goes behind this digital currency with social and carbon credits. And this concept is called identity as a service. And identity as a service, there are many companies building businesses around it. They leverage companies that do face recognition as a service. And every time your or anybody's face is in front of a camera, there's a chain of corporations making money in real time. So they found everybody's face is another great way to monetize in Wall Street and beyond. And this is also going to be used for geofencing. Geofencing is a term where symbolically, basically, you're geographically, whether it's in the internet and the metaverse or in the physical world, they can build an invisible fence with your digital ID and control your access to everything. So where you can travel by airplane, or where you can drive, or how far you can drive, how far you can walk, where in the metaverse you can go, who you can communicate with, who you can text, what book you can read, what content of the book you can read, everything is going to be monitored as well as manipulated. And where you can walk, they will limit you using all these puke guns and LED lights, because they are the weapons that are going to limit how far you can walk. And that's related to the 15-minute cities and 20-minute neighborhoods that they are building right now. So their goal is to lock down humanity in, you know, these smart cities and not allow them to move anywhere, pretty much. So the digital identity is inside the Trojan horse of security and privacy. I can't stress this enough. Whenever you hear the word security and privacy, run. And this will result in total control of humans, because people will comply in order to unlock access to life. And how is they going to use this with kids? There's a concept called social and emotional learning that's been creeping into schools for many years, for the last few years. It's also known as CEL. And the goal is that all kids will be monitored from cradle to career. And cameras and face recognition and emotion recognition are going to be at the heart of this. So they can even be monitoring the emotional state of a child, and the algorithms can decide whether a child abuse is happening at home. And then they can come for the children, which they will. Here's an example of a little this purple device. It's a talk pedometer. So whenever parents are talking to their child, the audio is going up to the cloud, and AI is monitoring what the parents are telling the kids. So if you're not talking enough about global warming and climate change, your carbon credits and social credits are going to go low. So you will be controlled on what you tell your kids. In return, the kids will be getting programmed by whatever the AI wants you to tell your kids. Here's an example. And these are devices that are already in the market. These are not like futuristic devices. People are already buying them for their homes, thinking that these are really cool gadgets to get home. Here's an example of an LED game board, and it has fisheye cameras looking at the kids. And depending on how the kids are reacting, the AI board game can modify what's being shown on the screen. And so at the heart of all this is a digital ID, remember that, which requires cameras and face recognition. They're also going to be used further in human capital value extraction. So they're going to make money in securitized futures markets, much like they did it, you know, going into the 2008 crash, where they had all these mechanisms to do layer upon layer of mortgage derivatives when the market crashed. So this is a new way of making money through faces and cameras. And so they can manipulate a child with SEL, because what the child sees on the screen and what the camera sees, how the face, it can modify what it's showing on the screen. You start manipulating the behavior of children in when they are in screen, in front of a screen. That's why they've been giving free computers for kids, you know, all across the world. It's why they have false flag shootings in schools, and everyone is fighting for gun control versus gun rights. And the Fear TV is, you know, blabbering all day long all over the world. It's about installing more security cameras and more face recognition cameras in the schools to keep the children safe. It has nothing to do with shootings. And people need to understand that. So here's an example of how they make money. They could go to top performers in a, you know, given class of schools across a state or something, and they group them along with their pathways, as in predictions on where their life is going to go. And they gamble on that based on prodigy asset groups that they form. And the future results will give them all the social and carbon credits and all the cryptocurrency they have, they need. So they're going to make even more money from the broken kids, because then there will be intervention. And when there's intervention, they can do all sorts of more betting on the behavior of kids going forward at different points in time in their career, you know, all the way from, again, from cradle to career. So this is just a game to the people who are, you know, manipulating this whole human civilization as we speak. So the emphasis, so if there are any parents in the audience here or grandparents, you need to really understand that if you're sending your kids to schools, private or public, they will have cameras in them. They will be given devices. All the devices are looking at them all the time. And it's not about knowledge. It's all about social and emotional control of the kids. So I can't stress enough, if you have kids, take them out of school, start homeschooling them with your friends and family who are, you know, pretty good at teaching. And now, last month, I think it was late April, yeah. So late April, it came out on the Department of State website that the global internet is now a multi-stakeholder internet governance. So the World Economic Forum and the United Nations have taken over the internet, which is a direct, you know, message to the world, if you understand this, that the digital identity has to be accepted by everyone if you want access to communications. So it's a zero trust world. They'll use the digital ID and your face, along with 3D cameras looking at your face, to access the internet. This is where we are going. So if you don't accept a digital ID, you can't enter the, you cannot get onto the internet, and you cannot open your phone, and you cannot make a phone call. And so I'll skip this, but here in Montana, I can change Montana to Sydney, Melbourne, Newcastle, whatever, you know, and there's cameras everywhere. And Montana, I live in a small place, you know, just 4,500 people. The closest town is half an hour away. And when you go there, there are hundreds and hundreds of smart city lights. It's really disgusting. And we have in our local state legislature, there's a study for facial recognition technology, and that's a complete red herring. So if you start seeing that in states or cities in Australia, just know that banning facial recognition means nothing, because your government, neither your government nor your state nor your local officials are doing facial recognition. So banning it is pointless, because the facial recognition is going to be done in the cloud on Amazon and Google servers, with artificial intelligence algorithms, with cameras installed by private companies on public lands, which are now owned by private corporations. So I've been having a very interesting time trying to fight this here. And then over here, you know, this is a small place, but over here at the intersection and everywhere, we're seeing all this junk go up. You see microwave towers, you know, hidden inside trees on ski slopes, and you see them openly displayed inside the cities. It's pretty bad. And given pictures I've seen from Melbourne, Australia, this is pleasant. And so if you go to retail stores, now they start having, they have cameras at self-checkout counters as well as non-self-checkout counters, because they're looking at everything you're buying. There are 4 facial recognition cameras when you enter any foyer now. So they've established who you are when you enter, and they're going to track you every square foot inside retail stores. And then this, you have the parking lot panopticons that are looking at all your cars and everybody. And then you have 5 cameras at this entrance. So it just goes on and on. This is not for safety and security. This is to track people, to do data collection, identity as a service, and then your digital ID tied to your behavior, your compliance, what you're buying, when you're buying, who you're with, everything. Here's an example of a company called Clearview AI. Investor is Peter Thiel, who's also invested in Palantir and working for Big Brother. And so every human being will be in its database if they aren't already, and they're going to use the facial recognition and the image database for predictive policing and pre-crime for stakeholders. And this movie was Minority Report, which came out probably 15 or 16 years ago. So they were telling us what's coming. It's not science fiction. There's a company called ID.me that is doing public-private partnerships. Their goal is inclusivity, diversity, et cetera, no identity left behind. And it's also for equity, so everybody's equal. But really, it's about taking your password, combining it with your driver's license, your passwords, and then doing digital selfies to unlock government and services like healthcare or retirement and stuff. So they are going to suck us all into the digital ID system one way or the other. And people need to understand that so that they can say no. Because once we accept a digital identity, it's game over for human civilization. Everybody will be fully controlled, and you will behave in exactly how they want you to behave. A few weeks ago, I was watching a talk by Yuval Harari. He's a spokesperson and an author for the World Economic Forum. And he presented this danger formula where B times C times D equals R. Where B is biological knowledge that they are picking up through your smartwatches, your PCR tests, your DNA tests. Compute power is all the compute power on the servers. That's unlimited now. They're printing all the money in the world to make as many servers to collect our data and compute. And then the D is the data they are gathering from the smart cities and all the sensors. And B, so this is the gives them the ability to hack humans in their transhuman agenda for those people who've been doing research. What we can do, and they are trying to sensorize everything, what we can do is to minimize the data we give them. If we are able to take out the sensors, take them down legally, work with your sheriffs and whoever your authorities are, and educate them on what's coming and tell them that this is going to be really used for extremely nefarious purposes, right? So just another way to think about it is artificial intelligence is the beast. You cannot get rid of AI. It's already there and it's the beast. The beast needs food. Data is the food, and the data conduit is all the sensors, the smart city infrastructure, the 5G towers, your telephone, your cameras at home, your microphones at home, cars and everything. They are the data conduit. So in order to stop the beast, you need to get rid of the data conduit. The data is going to be there because humans are going to do everything all the time, right? We're going to meet our friends. We're going to go here, whatever. So it's the data conduit which needs to be addressed. You can't address the data. You can't address AI. Because data and the sensors, they feed the beast. I'll say it again. And so the final lockdown requires cameras and face recognition sold to us as privacy and security. And that face is now used for digital ID, which is linked to a central banking digital currency. And that's the final lockdown. So we are always in lockdown mode, always. And so call to action is no digital ID, which means no face recognition, no cameras. Look up and observe cameras, LED lights, street lights, smart cities. These are installed incrementally and they are done at night and people are looking at their phones so they don't observe what's being done to them. You know, parents, go to your schools and take action. There are cameras in, you know, parking lots, in the hallways, in the laptops and everywhere. So your kids are being monitored and the SES scoring has begun and they are being manipulated. And figure out in your areas who installed, authorized, and funded the smart city surveillance infrastructure. I've managed to decode it here, but it's very hard for the local politicians right now. They're finding it very hard to kind of address these issues. So we have to come up with other creative ways to address this. And if anyone wants to reach out to me independently, I can, you know, share with them, you know, how, what all I've uncovered and how they've done it so successfully. Right. So, but the real thing is that in your local neighborhoods, we, the people, didn't ask for these monstrosities. We don't want them. And we need to let everybody know that it's our land. We are living here. We don't want this stuff. Right. So basically the whole infrastructure that's been set up, we have silent weapons that have been installed and are pointing at us. And once the final switches are turned on, humanity will be in invisible chains. And most of the world won't even know what happened because they'll be watching TV. So turn off your televisions, please. And that concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to take questions.
Thank you so much. I'll just one sec. I'll just ask if everyone in the room doesn't speak because it'll have too much. We will take questions in a second. Just thank you, Arman. That it's incredibly chilling. It's outstanding how they are removing any level of human relationship or human interaction where we intuitively understand our children or intuitively relate to each other, mm-hmm. and they're replacing it with a technology that will completely interfere with that and supersede it. So I just quickly wanted to say, say that I heard about you through a woman called Cindy Niles, who's doing work on this through, she's on Facebook as well. So Cindy Niles, she's good to follow as well. She's in Melbourne, so she's also good, or I think she's in Victoria. And that's how I came across you. So we will take some questions. So basically, if I can just ask if we can just, keep it live streaming. If I can just ask if the question's just a question, not a bit, because Arman will have trouble hearing that, and then I'm going to relay it into the screen so Arman can hear it. And I also wanted to say that we are recording this on Zoom, so even though it was scratchy being live streamed, we'll also have this and record and have it up as a recording. So, yeah, any questions? So, Pamela? Is there any way that you can get around facial recognition? So is there anything you can wear over your face that you cannot be recognized?
Yeah, I guess you can get one of those nice anonymous masks. But they'll get you through any devices, right? So if you're carrying your device, even if it's switched off, they can still track you. So the only way to not be tracked is you obviously cover your face, change your gait, because many AI algorithms are also tracking our gait. So the gait recognition in combination with facial recognition in combination with other tracking things that you have on you, they use a deterministic approach to know that it's you. You can use a Faraday cage. It's costs about $25 here. It's a little black pouch. You put your phone in and it seals off all communication with wireless equipment.
It's a Faraday cage.
How do you spell it?
Faraday cage, Faraday, F-A-R-A-D-A-Y. There's a company called, I forget the name of the company, but it's if you can just go to the web and type in Faraday cage, many companies make it.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Just basically say the same thing. What can we do to stop all of this? I mean, in our homes and just basically not have anything in there?
So is it a matter of not getting on smart devices? Is that one of the things that we can really do? How else can we remove the data collecting from our lives?
Well, so the thing is, like, you know, we become so dependent on smartphones, at least, and our computers at home. Very few people will be able to say, no, I'm not even going to have a smartphone. Even if you don't have, if you have a dumb phone, they're still tracking you. GPS is in everything. Now, you could go remove your GPS. You could go remove your Wi-Fi chip from your phone. So you can do those things. The question is, how many people in the world are willing to give that up, right? And then one thing I can recommend is at home, you know, have a direct physical connection to your computer instead of having Wi-Fi. Because Wi-Fi and other wireless, you know, frequencies, they're not good for human health. And especially with the 5G boxes, 5G has other problems at 60 gigahertz. That's the absorption frequency between oxygen molecules and human cells when we breathe. And if you, you know, crank up the power and the amplitude of the 5G signal, you're going to have respiratory problems.
Any more questions?
How does this link up with the quantum financial system? Because the CBDC being, wasn't that going to go to gold currency?
Can you just give me a question, because I can't. So what's the question? How does this link up?
Does this link up with the quantum financial system?
Probably eventually. I haven't studied that deeply yet, but I'm certain it will. Everything is going to be connected. That's the whole concept of the Internet of Things, the artificial intelligence of things, the Internet of Eyes, the Internet of Money. It's like, it's one big, you know, it's going to be a fully centralized system. Even the billionaires won't be able to get away from it beyond a certain point in time. They are implementing the infrastructure because they're getting rich, so they are doing it. Eventually, the AI will come for the billionaires and they'll have the tightest noose around their necks, much more than, you know, us normal people.
Questions, Flavia?
What is the actual end game? I mean, we're told it's control, but there must be something beyond that. What's the end game?
From their side, what is the end game? What's the actual motivation for this, and where are they trying to lead us to?
What outcome? Two things: total control, complete control of humanity, and it's infinite wealth for the, you know, the darkest forces who are implementing this. Because what people need to understand, there are two motions. What are the two things that they are using in this agenda, which is going to give them maximum wealth? Nature and humans. So in September or October of last year, it was announced that the Rockefeller Foundation has teamed up with Wall Street, you know, companies, although, you know, Wall Street essentially, where they introduced a new class of assets called natural asset classes, NACs. So they're going to make money on trees. Every tree is going to have a digital ID. And there's proof for all this. They're making digital twins of every crop and every tree in the world in the metaverse. And they're going to be betting on trees and nature and carbon, this whole environmental, you know, stuff that they've been, you know, shoving down our throats for over 30 years. And this net zero 2050 carbon, where does all the carbon reside, you know? Think about that. And then the other way they're going to make money is through humans, by our face, everything we do, digital ID, you know, SEL, you know, prodigy asset groups for kids. They're making money off humans and nature. That's the end game. And of course, they are enjoying the game also in the process. So it's for entertainment purposes.
This is just my question. How is the metaverse and what, you know, I haven't had time to research it yet, but, you know, twinning and having a twin in the metaverse, and can you speak to any of that, how that all fits in?
Yeah, I can. I'll keep it brief so that I don't make life too complicated. They are twinning everything in the world. There's going to be two of everything. They have projects around the world, including in Australia, where they are building digital twins of cities. So every building, every national park, every, you know, city park, everything is going to have a twin in the digital world or in the metaverse. Every human is going to have a twin. So their goal is to keep us locked up in our homes, put on a virtual or augmented reality or mixed reality headset and interact with each other, with our loved ones, with our friends, go shopping, playing cricket or soccer, all in the metaverse. So your digital ID will unlock your face through your VR headset, and then your digital twin will be the one who's going and having all the activities while you're sitting in your chair. So children. If people have not seen the Matrix, people should need to see the Matrix. Matrix is not a science fiction film. It's a documentary telling us this is where we are going to take the world.
And do you think, what year do you think this is going to really get rolled out in? How long?
It's already happening. If you look at non-fungible tokens and all, there are companies being built already. They're doing digital fashion. People are buying digital real estate. It's already rolled out. And there's a certain number of people that are already buying into this stuff. And they are like people who are buying digital real estate in digital twin cities. And it's going to be a process. There's not going to be one switch. The switches will keep coming in different parts of the world at different times. But there will be a final switch. And I believe that final switch is going to be first major final switch is going to be 2030, but I believe that they are accelerating their agenda because more people are waking up at a faster rate than I think these, you know, people had thought. So they are accelerating their agenda right now. Okay. So it could happen as early as 2024 in places like the United States or late 23. All you have to do is look at Agenda 2030. Look at Agenda 2050, Agenda 2040. They've got all these papers published. Just go to the World Economic Forum, Rockefeller Foundation, United Nations websites. The plans are already in place. They're not just kind of going boom, 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 you know, execute.
Yeah.
I guess
it's a
resistance,
so it
can't
be resistance and say, well, we'll form a parallel where it's freedom. Internet. Has there been anything?
Have there been pockets of resistance? Have there been any countries specifically where people have stood together and say, we're not going to be part of this and we're going to create an alternative system?
There are people who are doing that. They're building their, you know, alternative communities, because if you accept what I just showed you, you're going to be in the new the final lockdown matrix, right?
Right.
And in order to avoid that, you have to build your own groups to say, no, we're going to barter with each other. We're going to grow our own food. We're going to build our own, you know, physical currency, because the current banking system is going to be fully collapsed and you won't be able to get into the new banking system unless you enter this new matrix. And so, yes, I think there are people who are doing that. I know a few, you know, groups here who are ready for this. I am not, unfortunately, yet. But I know what needs to be done.
Asking if he's seen Charlie Ward on his platform on the internet. And what he is saying is he's in negotiation with the Arabs so that they can set up a monetary system, which would be separate from what these guys are trying to do.
Have you followed Charlie Ward?
Nope. Should I?
I don't know who Charlie Ward is either. It's just a question from the audience, but he's into discussions with the Arabic community about setting up an alternative financial system, which will include cash.
I'll look him up. But that's, if people go and study history little deeper, Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi and all were not taken out because they were bad guys. They were threatening to get out of this fiat currency financial system and move to their own local, gold dinars and other currencies, which would have really messed up the plans for the New World Order.
Yeah, okay. The other thing, I look at young people now and teenagers and how much they are already connected in to, their mobile phones and watching things, and it's, a good 12 to 16 hours a day already. And I'm thinking they're probably going to think this metaverse is a really great idea because they've been so indoctrinated, and this is really concerning me. I don't know if you can speak to how do we communicate to young people about what they're going to lose.
I don't know. Depends on how much control you have over them. If I had kids who were young enough, I would just cut the internet from the house and remove all the devices from their possessions. And I'd take them out for more activities in nature, teach them how to grow food, how to plant a tree, and much, much more.
Get them back, yeah. Okay. Any more questions? It's just being asked, is there any hope? Do you have hope? Do you think we've got chances of slowing? I think I've heard you say before our hope is of slowing it down. You did say that there's more resistance. You think there's more resistance than they were counting on, and that's with not everyone being very aware yet. Not many people are aware of this. So do you see hope?
I see hope for a very small number of people who are willing to understand what's actually going on. And the majority of my nearies and dearies over the world, they are scared to know what's going on. So they're not, they don't want to know what's going on. That's it. But I think there will be a small number of people who will get through this and not enter the matrix.
Do you think
many will be killed in the process? Pardon me?
I
said many will be killed in the process. But there will be some who will survive, and the more that survive, the more danger the matrix is in.
Yeah, okay.
But I'd say the majority of humanity will walk in to this the lion's den voluntarily.
Yeah. Any more questions? What about countries? Are there countries that you think will not sign up for this, that will not agree to this?
The ones that didn't agree to it, all their leaders were taken out. So I am of the firm belief that every country in the world today has leaders, mostly planted, that have signed up to it and will go along with it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have turned on the switch with COVID.
Okay. So one of our steps, I imagine, is that we, as you said, we need to become clear here within our Central Coast community, who is overseeing this within the community, who is overseeing this, where are they located in council or state government? And we need to locate those people and put a face and a name to them. And then we need to go from there to talk to them.
I don't believe it's being done by any government people. It's being done by what they call public-private partnerships. The money is being printed from central banking and central bankers. It's a private banking cartel. If people haven't read the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, please read it. You'll start understanding how this whole money system works, because that's at the core it's at the core to how this agenda has been implemented.
What's it called? What's that book called?
The Creature from Jekyll Island. By Edward Griffin.
Okay, yes, Pamela.
Explain more about the games of 5G because we're just about to get switched on all around the
country. We're about to get switched on with 5G around the Central Coast. Can you please explain more about the dangers with 5G?
So what I've read, I'm not a microwave specialist. My specialization is more in cameras, imaging, Internet of Things, and AI. But what I've read, and I've read papers from as early as the early 2000s, 5G frequencies go from 30 gigahertz to 300 gigahertz. Presently, in the last year or two, they are operating in the 20s of gigahertz, so just under 5G. And it depends on the frequencies they turn on. And when you get to 60 gigahertz, that's really a very dangerous frequency to be at. So as I said, at 60 gigahertz is the absorption frequency between human cells and oxygen molecules. So that's a big danger point. But these microwave frequencies, they also, they hurt the development of human cells or they break down human cells. So it's going to be really bad for us. It's going to accelerate aging. We don't know what cancers are going to be caused and whatnot. I've seen videos and photographs. I have no way to ascertain their authenticity where trees and all have been seriously affected near 5G small cells and various other LED lamps. I suspect, and I'm going to find a way to get there within a few weeks, but I suspect more than 5G, it's these LED lights that are going to be even worse weapons than the 5G microwave frequencies.
It was interesting to hear you also talk about the social and emotional learning and how, you know, billionaires and the incredibly wealthy are going to invest in us and then, or our children, or and then profit from it. I've just realized, I just learned about social bonds, which are already happening within Australia, where billionaires and corporations can invest in vulnerable families and then get a return based on them. Tashi Talks is a really good one for within Australia. And there are some programs that I'd already heard about because I come from a welfare background. I'd already heard about certain programs. So billionaires can invest in young people in early intervention programs, so the children, so they say this is how much it costs the child if they end up in the foster care system. And then, so instead of that, let's put money into early intervention, we'll fund it, there's whole programs, we'll fund it as billionaires and corporations, and then based on whatever model they've got as to how much, how beneficial that program's been, they get a return on their investment. So that has already been happening since at least 2019 in Australia. And that, so this is just what you're talking about, is they've actually found out a way to exploit and make money out of every single component of being a human being, as well as the environment.
Exactly.
The environment.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's Human Capital Index. And if you go and read some of the papers, was basically like humans are valuable and we need to find a way to extract as much value from every human as possible. It's out there. They published papers there.
Yeah.
So is this ultimately state of the capitalism? Is that what this is?
Yeah. Is this ultimately stakeholder capitalism?
That's right. So one has to just see some of the videos coming out of the lips of all these WEF, you know, talking heads, and they've been talking about stakeholder capitalism for a while now. So there's going to be we are currently in a transition from shareholder capitalism to stakeholder capitalism. So in terms of, I didn't talk about it in terms of corporations, but traditionally, if you are a company, private company or a public company traded on the stock exchange, essentially your profits and losses and, you know, predictive profits and losses and revenues, they kind of dictate where your company stands with respect to its stock price and its, you know, value. With the stakeholder capitalism, that is changing and in place, it's already happening as we speak. It's called the ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance model. So that is why now you're seeing that all the public companies out there, they're talking about Black Lives Matter. They're talking about how their environmental footprint, products have to have a green certification. Because if they don't do that, their environmental score will go down. If they don't talk about Black Lives Matter and trans agendas, their social score will go down. And the governance aspect is what all departments and people they are putting in place in order to enforce environmental and social, you know, activity and mumbo jumbo within every employee within the organization. And BlackRock has come out many, I think last year, saying basically, if you don't align with the ESG agenda, we're going to kick your stock out of the portfolios of all the, you know, Wall Street investment banks and hedge funds. So it's basically saying we'll destroy your company if you don't move the ESG model, move to the ESG model. And I believe there were a lot of CEOs that resisted it. And before COVID was announced, 2019, over 1,300 public company CEOs stepped down. So one has to connect the dots. Did they really step down or were they kicked out by their boards? Because the boards are, you know, hedge fund people or private equity people or venture capital people who get all the money printing from these central bankers.
Do you see it going so far as you said that they can monitor, you know, your eyelids and how your eyes are moving? Do you see it going so far that they're going to hack into what you're thinking and then be punished according to your thoughts? Or
that's their goal. That's their goal. And eye tracking is already done. I mean, they're doing eye tracking right now. I'm on video. My eyes are being tracked, literally. And the algorithms that are running on Zoom servers, they are logging my behavior. They are logging what I'm seeing, saying versus what my facial facial expressions are and what my where my eyes are looking at on the screen. It's all being logged and analyzed. Now, have they gotten into my mind yet? Probably. I mean, I've been brought up in the same systems that you guys in Australia were brought up. So to some extent, I've spent the last two decades unlearning and I'm continuing to unlearn.
Is there any back doors, any encryption to bypass all of this?
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's going to be tough, especially if you have relatively new devices. They have kill switches not only on cars, they have kill switches on computers, and I mean, they can get in. There are backdoors that they've already installed that we don't know of, that they can get into all our devices. So if you have a device that has internet connectivity, you are at their mercy. So my take is load up on physical books as much as you can.
Yeah.
Download all your ebooks and PDF books on thumb drives and have backups, because once you decide you don't want to be on the internet, at least you can read books on your iPad, but it should take away the Wi-Fi chip, take away the GPS chip, but don't connect to the internet. It's going to be an interesting world. I mean, we all lived without an internet before the early 90s.
Yeah,
we were doing just fine.
We're all using technology to try and get the word out as well. So it's this mixed bag.
Yeah, it's a kind of a chicken and egg.
I know that it's all very disturbing. I think everyone, the mood in the room is very disturbed because it is very disturbing. And I don't think there's any way through that at the moment. I'll just come back. So I've just got one last question, but that's popped up. But I think this isn't the, I mean, this is only the start of the conversation. Aman, will you stay connected to us? And we can, as you said before, we can get in touch when we sort of get our heads around things a little bit, with digest what you've talked about so far and what our next moves need to be as a community, because we will work on this as a community. So can we stay in
absolutely
touch with you?
I'm here. I'll help anyone that needs my help. One thing I think everyone needs to wrap their heads around is that presently, nowhere in the world do you have a single elected or appointed official that works for the people. I can say it with complete certainty, based on just connecting the dots. I'm not saying everyone is corrupt. I'm not saying everyone has been bought, but I'm saying they do not have the authority to do what we want them to do.
Yeah.
So as your group of people in a particular neighborhood or community, whatever, community is a word that is actually a pretty bad word if you understand what communitarianism is, and they are going to take us there too. But notwithstanding that, everyone should understand that they need to figure out how to take the sovereignty of the individual and collective sovereignty of a neighborhood back.
Yep.
Do not rely on your government officials. They are not going to be able to do anything. You don't have a representative government in any corner of Australia, just like we do not have in the United States of America. Once people understand that, then from there, people can make progress.
Okay. So, you want to ask your question? Yeah. I've got the contact. You're happy for? I'll sort that out with you about how to get in touch with you. How you want people to get in touch with you directly, or do you want to say it here now?
I mean, I go to Facebook every day at least once.
Yeah, on Facebook.
So they can add me on Facebook as a friend, or follow me on Facebook, or send me a message. I don't have a problem. Just give a reference to this meeting. Then I'll know you already have some context of what I spoke about.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time. We also greatly appreciate your time, and so thankful that someone with your expertise and knowledge has come out and started talking about this. And I so hope more people that are in your position do that. But thank you. It must have been it's very brave, and it must have been a very difficult step to move into actually confronting this. So thank you. We very much appreciate you, Aman.
Thank you.